And as far as balance, though, it's been a time of like of just navigating when to say no to things and feel good about it. And that's always been a thing, because even before the book has come out, I've been a generally busy person.
Hello and welcome back to Soft Spoken, a podcast. This is your host, Marfine Chan. I want to welcome you back because this is a special episode with my good friend Maya Williams, who is the poet laureate for the city of Portland and just came out with a book, a poetry collection called Judas and Suicide. Please find links to that book in the podcast episode description. And also, please follow Maya Williams on her social media. Before we dive into this week's episode, or this month's episode, whichever one it is, the topic is on life, death, and poetry. But I do want to give a trigger warning here that we do discuss suicide and suicidal thoughts and ideation. And so, if those topics are triggering for you, please take note of that and opt out if you have to. But I just wanted to give that warning ahead of time before you start listening too much. But for those of you who can stay on, welcome. And I hope that you enjoy my interview with my friend Maya Williams on life, death, and poetry. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the interview that I'm having today with my friend Maya Williams, who is a local poet, a poet laureate for, I believe, the state of Maine. You might have to correct me on that one.
The city of Portland. Julia Bousma is the poet laureate of the state of Maine. I'm the poet laureate of the city of Portland, Maine.
Oh, great, great. Thanks for that. Yeah. I am not as well versed in the poetry world, although you're getting me started, especially
You're writing really great poetry, though, so you're going to get there. We just need to get you to more open mics. We need to get you to submit more poems for publication. You're good to go.
Wait until you see the form that I've thought of and think that I will claim. But this is about you, Maya. You're someone that I have seen just get out there and share your poetry, your creations, your genius. And so folks have a sense of this about you, that your writing is out there, that pieces of you are out there. But this podcast has really leaned into, like I said before we started, the idea that, you know, public figures, it's such a weird topic or notion, because public figures are still human, but we set them up on pedestals and create idols out of them. And this happens to both me and you and other folks that we know too. And that sort of then gives or opens up to us not being treated as humans. So part of this is me, you know, honing in on who is the human behind the public persona. And so give us a window into who the person is behind the persona, the human being. Are they two different things? You know, share with us what makes you feel human and the fullness of being human, the different hobbies you might have. How do you escape your reflection periods? What do you think about things like that?
I've been thinking a lot lately about, like, when it comes to sharing your writing publicly. It's been interesting telling folks about how much I actually do enjoy hearing people's feedback about the writing. 'Cause most of the time, folks are all like, "Oh, I know that you're busy. I didn't want to like disrupt you by sending you things." And I find that fascinating because no one takes that into mind when it comes to emailing me or messaging me about like, hey, can you do this reading? Or, hey, can you submit this thing? Like, and granted, there are folks who are all like, hey, I know that you're busy, but can you do this thing? But like, I just find it so fascinating that it comes up more when it comes to people wanting to just share their praise of my work or share their kind words about my work. And they're just like, oh, I didn't want to tell you though, because you're busy. And I find that so strange, because it's like, I would much rather hear that than try to like feel around your angles when it comes to work stuff. I don't consider it work when you just want to say kind things to me. So I find that fascinating when it comes to like, it's very human to want to love on your stuff or love on you. But because of like this idea around like, oh, you're so busy, I see you doing readings on Instagram, and so you probably wouldn't have time to get to my message. And it's like, but I want to read your message. So
yeah, I think, and to veer off a little bit, the topic of praise came up in one of our Facebook Messenger conversations.
Yes, it did.
And it was revelatory in that you said, just accept my praise without any conditions. I'm just giving you praise. And it got me really to pause. And I was like, how many times have I heard praise from coworkers, from supervisors, from people who I look up to? And they're obviously laden with conditions of, I'm only going to praise you as long as you behave rightly in my eyes, or mm-hmm. do the things that I consider upright and those types of things. But you were very, you cut to the chase. You're just like, just accept my praise. No conditions, no questions asked.
Yeah. And it's so, because not everyone is used to receiving it so unconditionally. So that's why I remember messaging you going like, listen, you don't have to agree with me. You just need to accept it.
Yeah, and I think that's such a something that's just needs to be, more awareness needs to be spread about that. Because the more I think about it, it's like, how many of us humans, all humans, but also those of us who are in the public eye, who do fall into this trap of, you know, not starving for praise or views or publicity, per se, but sort of we get locked into that cycle of posting content, writing new poetry or new books, because, you know, we want to hear quote unquote praise or we want to, you know, get more notoriety. And then we get sucked into the whole, well, I'm putting it all out there and, you know, praise is going to come at me. And we subconsciously understand that there are conditions attached to that praise. Mm-hmm. Like in the art and creative world and the literary world, how do you see that work out with other writers that you've observed?
Yeah. I do appreciate how, because there have been a few written works reviewing my book, or like a few things where folks talk about a reading that they've been to of mine, or there's a publication that's promoting the book or what have you. Like, it's been nice hearing from people like, oh my goodness, you're getting well-deserved feedback, right? Like I keep hearing the phrase like well-deserved. and that's very nice. And I also recognize like how often in the art world, sometimes it is based upon what the work is like, and then sometimes it's based upon who you know. And also it's a combination of both. Like I appreciate building a home in Portland in a way that has helped me build these connections in order to facilitate a book tour in the first place, in order to facilitate a way to get interviewed on podcasts, a way to a way for folks to produce publications about my work. And at the same time, it's nice that folks aren't like, ugh, Maya again? Like, it's... I hope I'm making sense.
No, that makes total sense. I totally understand that, because sometimes I feel like consciously I need to pull back from posting too much. But at the same time, how much of that is based off of other people's perceptions of how much I post rather than am I pulling up back?
Also, your posts get you work. My right? posts get me work. Like,
yeah, we need to be paid.
Yeah.
Someone on a dating app messaged me once and they said, Marfine, you're a generally kind person, but you're really stuck up.
Huh.
And I was like, I know why you're saying that, because you see me post so much and I'm always posting about achievements and events and all those types of things, but those aren't just posts just to brag. Those mm-hmm. are posts because of where I've been and where what I've become and where I'm going. If you understand the totality currently my full life's experience of 32 years, I think for folks to say that to BIPOC people especially and judge and critique us for that, when there are,
it's like we liked you better when you were quiet.
Yeah. Oh my God. Right on the nail, right on point right there. They liked us better when we were quiet. Yeah. And then we look around and there's white people claiming credit for everything, sure. even things that aren't theirs. And so I totally get that. Yeah. So thank you for sharing that. Thank you. In terms of the human being and the person behind the Instagrams, the websites, the even behind the poetry book, sort of give us a window into how do you engage in self-care? How do you cultivate the person and the human being and sort of develop and grow that reservoir that you obviously very much lean on to pull inspiration from for your writing, for your creativity. And so, you know, different ways in terms of how do you relax, how do you, some of the hobbies that you turn to that isn't necessarily writing that sort of brings you joy, those types of things.
I feel like... You and I share some similarities when it comes to our writing, because we both write about ourselves and decide to publish it, and then people read it, and therefore there are folks who are like, oh my goodness, I feel like I know you, or there are folks who are like oh my goodness, what aren't you writing about? If this is what you're writing about, I wonder what you're not writing about. And I know that for me personally, I like to make sure that I've processed it as much as I could with my therapists or with my loved ones, before deciding to like publish something at least, or to write a complete draft of something, even if I don't choose to share it or don't choose to publish it. Because if I share it when it's still fresh and I haven't been recovering from it, it's not healthy for me, and it's not going to be healthy for the people reading it mm-hmm. either. And for me, in my head, it's not going to be as good of a poem anyway. Mm-hmm. Especially if I haven't thought it fully through, and it's just more so of a venting space. And again, which is fine. And I have read from poets who they're like, this is a venting space, and I'm like, that's great. I just want to be sure that I am tending to myself to the best of my ability. And that doesn't mean that I'm cured, quote unquote. That doesn't mean that that any of the problems have gone away entirely. Like, I still have a mental illness. I was on the phone with my grandmother, and she finally told me her thoughts about the poetry collection. And she had said to me, she was like, I sense a bit of hurting. Like I don't sense anger. I just sense a lot of hurting. And I told her, I was like, well, yeah, the hurt comes sometimes. So yeah, that makes sense. And it was actually really, really nice to hear that feedback too, because she knows that that how I grew up around her is addressed in the collection as well.
Wow. Yeah. So other than writing, what are your favorite things to do around Portland? Do you only stay in Portland, or do you like to travel outside of Portland? I know you're traveling a lot these days, but
I enjoy spending time with loved ones in Portland. I tend to meet a lot of folks for coffee in Portland. I don't drink coffee, but I know a lot of my loved ones do. My partner has family in Alna, so he and I like to go to Alna at times.
Alna?
Alna, Maine is like my 15 boss minutes away from Damascata. There. Yeah.
I'll have to connect you two, because she's a wonderful person, has a partner and a little girl. Oh my gosh, the small world we live in.
Small world we live in. That's what's up. I love watching movies. And at the same time, like, I tend to write about movies as well, so sometimes I need to be careful about like reminding myself, like, this is not a work thing, this is a me thing. I am enjoying this movie for me. I like to read, and again, that comes with care sometimes too, because sometimes I read books for work related stuff, such as book discussions or when I'm about to during the podcast interviews I was on this summer, I had read a lot of books and movies in preparation for them. I have a lot of books on my list that are for me.
You mentioned movies.
Yeah.
What kind of movies? Any specific genre or varied?
I tend to enjoy I tend to enjoy movies with a lot of color. I like good music in movies, and I like movies with really great well-written dialogue. And I understand all the things that I'm listing are very subjective, because someone could say the exact same thing and tell me movies that I don't like.
So I was at Lady Jewel Box a few weeks ago, and I happened to run into friends of a friend. I think two of them were big film, they studied film. And so in my endless, boundless curiosity and longing to connect, I started talking about some films I knew, and for me, I'm one of those people who half remembers the actors' names or half remembers the lyrics to a song, and so for me, I was like stumbling through, like, I was talking about Everywhere All at Once, Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And I was basically just going through how, like, I went in and perceived it in a very different way because of what I'd seen Michelle Yeoh in before. And so I was judging that movie based on what she had been in before and how I struggled with going through that movie. But at the end, I realized that they just intentionally messed with me and led me to a place where ultimately I was happy, because the movie was so much more than just about an overbearing Asian mother or kung fu or karate or a fighting couple. It was multi-generational conflict and reconciliation and finding peace, and how the very the relationships we have can tear black holes in the universe. So go ahead.
Love so much about that movie is that amongst within the Asian family centered in the movie, you never hear the phrase I love you said amongst them. Like, you've only, like, for example, we only hear Michelle Yeoh say it to Jamie Lee Curtis, right? Because that's like the trigger happy word for plot issues. Not an issue, but like that's related to the plot. That's unconventional. Whereas, like, whenever we're on the family, they never say that phrase because they're just showing it. They're just showing how much they mean to each other and how much that impact matters.
Yeah, I love that movie. Books. What's on your list currently?
On my list currently is your book, actually.
Trying to flatter
me. Receive that praise, sir.
Okay, I'll be silent. Accept it.
Accept it. I just finished my friend Megan's book. She wrote a poetry collection called Jesus Merch. Mm-hmm. And they're basically poems in response to a lot of like these Christian specific trinkets that are sold for like Sunday school gatherings or like church gatherings or it's a critique of like of capitalism when it comes to selling religious goods. So I loved reading that. I finished reading the poetry collection, Burning Like Her Own Planet. I'm looking at my current list right now. And I'm currently finishing a book for the BTS Center for a book discussion I'm leading on the 20th called How Beautiful We Were.
Sorry, I was looking at my list of books. I was like, what am I reading?
What's on your list?
Well, I've had to put some off because someone here had suggested a very good book that I'm very into right now. The Poetry Unbound book by Adrego Tuma. I just, so I'm reading it on my Kindle and listening to it because there's just something about his voice and matching with the words. But also, I need to see the poems that are being read. Because why listen to a book about structure and all that type of stuff if you can't see it? And like, it's just like, I think I sent you something after I read like 10 pages. Mm-hmm. I was like, already I feel like permission and a sense of unleashing. Because my issue was I was, you know, learning English. And grammar was not my favorite thing, and it was kind of like, it was punished for not doing it the right way over time. And then going into law school, you get ingrained in a certain type of writing. And for me, getting out of the structure of lines appearing a certain way, grammar, sentences, periods, and commas, people always commented in law school and that I used too many commas. And I was like, I use commas for a very specific reason, to partition within a large paragraph. And so this has allowed me to like really understand how different poets arrange and create poems that, you know, obscure and create gray space and you know, black and white space and all those types of things. And he's so good at just analyzing them all. So
I'm so glad you're enjoying it. I love his work so much. We met Patrick and I met through the BTS Center. We were both in a reading organized by Peterson Toscano in the summer of 2021. He is very, very sweet. I love his work. And I asked him to blurb my book, and he surprisingly said yes. And I just adore him.
Yeah, that's amazing to have someone like that, like, within, I don't know how fast they return the email, but just to have that email return or that call return or that text return and say, yes, absolutely. Like, for me, that was Jed Coffin. And then, lo and behold, I got pulled into his orbit and meeting his mom and all that type of stuff. Oh, that's so cool. Yeah, so it's sort of amazing, the writer's world and how people can look on the outside and see it and feel like it's insular. But I don't know. Is it insular? I think publishing is insular, right? But when it comes to writers and writers getting to know each other, I don't think it's quite as insular as what people might think. It's not some secret cult.
No, I wouldn't describe it as, excuse me, I would not describe it as some, quote, secret cult, end quote. I will say it does make a world of a difference when, like, you're in community with fellow writers and that you just get really, really excited for them because you know how genuine people they are, and then you read their, and then you read their work and you see how it connects to them. And so then when they start getting good things, you're like, yes, keep getting good things. Yes, please.
Yeah. So, speaking about good things, you've been getting a lot of good things, a lot of accolades for Judas and Suicide, and a lot of accolades in general for just the super kind human being you are and sort of spreading that around in what can seem like a harsh world sometimes. But I think that artists, creators, writers, yeah, we might pull out and draw attention to the gritty and the grunge, is that a word, grunge of life, but at the same time we do that to kind of also present things in life that are absolutely worth living for. And so with this book, with the fame that you have, with the publicity that you're getting, how have you managed or adjusted to life as a published author, poet, creator, and what are, more specifically, what are moments where you felt like things were out of balance, and then how, what steps did you take to bring things back into balance?
I will say I still find the word fame interesting in when it comes to our work as writers, because like because typically what I associate with fame is somewhere around like the equivalent of like very high profile people in media or on the internet or in entertainment media that can't leave their homes or can't go grocery shopping in public without being bombarded or some don't have public social media accounts anymore because it can get really exhausting receiving death threats all the time. Right. And also like not everyone who is of high profile may have a great income, but some of them do. And so that's another thing that I associate with it, which is like not the case for either of us here in this conversation. Like we're still able to walk around in our city generally pretty safely. No one's bombarding us when we're grocery shopping. And you and I still have full-time jobs along with our creative work. Whereas we're not making our full income is not with our creative work. And at the same time, like you and I get asked to speak at schools a lot. You and I get asked to do a lot of things. And I know that sometimes I receive like random messages about the book or like random requests outside of Maine, which is really nice. Which is a sign around like, oh, more people are knowing my work and who I am since the book has been out. And traveling for the book has helped with that. And as far as balance, though, it's been a time of like of just navigating when to say no to things and feel good about it. And that's always been a thing, because even before the book has come out, I've been a generally busy person. Mm-hmm. But since the book has come out, it's been interesting how during the book tour, for example, there was one week I came back from travels and said yes to a bunch of things because I did not want people to feel like I was not giving them enough attention just because of the book coming out. Whereas since coming back from California, giving myself more permission to say no to things and more permission to reschedule things, and because it's like I just spent a lot of time traveling for 2 weeks for a book, and granted some of it was for vacation time as well. Generally speaking, for a book, and I'd like to not do too much.
Yeah, I think that was always my thing. Even though I took vacation time recently, and it was two weekends plus 5 work days that I took off for vacation, like 5, 6, 7 days in, I still had like, you know, 3, 4 days left in my vacation, but I started itching. Like, it's like, I need to do something. I can't just sit and not do anything. Mm-hmm. And I started checking my work email. I started booking myself for the right when I get back. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, why the hell am I doing this? Like, just, can I just like sit? And I don't even have to sit still. I can like go for a walk in the woods, or, you know, take a dip in the water. And I was just like, this drive to like be wanting to do something, and to have things ready to do when I get back, quote unquote, from vacation. So I totally get that, because it's just, I think what I always say, the advice that I don't take, that I give, is,
why not? Why don't you take it? I don't even know what you're going to say yet, but already I'm like, why aren't you going to take it then?
Is I don't know, like, just so my, I have nephews, and I think my sister always feels a need to always be having them do something, and wanting them have the most fun in their lives and have the best times of their lives. It's like, you know, it's okay for them to be bored and to be still.
Sure.
And then I was like, oh crap, I'm giving advice that I don't even follow. But what I've noticed is, in those moments of boredom, those are moments of quietude that lead to inspiration for creative things. Like, your brain needs a break sometimes, and I think me starting to realize that has unleashed a lot of these creative sort of pursuits that I'm trying to branch back out into, that I've kind of put on hold. So I totally get that. And what are your thoughts on the word bored and being bored?
Because I've been adopting more of this idea around like there's a sense of peace when it comes to boredom. So sometimes I've said to myself, you're not bored, you're at peace. And that has been a helpful reframing. And also, like, in the In the poetry collection, the opening poem has its first line saying, "In the beginning, God was born lonely and loving enough." But I like to pause when I'm reading it after the word "bored" to see people's reactions. And for some it clicks, and for some they're like, "How dare you call God bored?" Or like there some folks that are like, "Huh?" And it's fascinating to watch.
Yeah, bored. Such an interesting word, God and bored and lonely. Yeah. The whole idea about God is interesting. Ex nihilo and from nothing.
There's a writer, Kaveh Akbar, who is a poet, wrote the books Calling a Wolf a Wolf and Pilgrim Bell. And I saw him on a panel at Randolph College with some other poets. And he had said something like, "When I'm talking about God, I mean like," and he just moves his whole body like in a circle. Mm. And one of the poets was like, "Could you do that again?"
Yeah, wow.
As a way to like gesture to like everything. And
I think, yeah, I do a little bit of world building for a fantasy thing that I've always just been plugging away at. And there's really no God per se, like singular God per se, but I think bored is perhaps another word for void or empty space or an expanse that can be filled, right? Mm. So if you're not bored, then you don't have anything to fill. Or, yeah, anyway, I'm getting too into it.
It's your podcast, you do what you want.
No, it's I'll have to write something about it. That's how I'll get it out of my system. Mm-hmm. So from knowing you for online for most of the pandemic and then meeting you in person a few times in the past.
First time I met you was long before you published your book. I first met you at local Sprouts.
I remember that now.
Mm-hmm. Before local Sprouts closed. Yeah.
Main Inside Out. That was before the pandemic, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, that was so long ago.
Yeah.
The black hole of the pandemic kind of sucked all the memories I had before.
That's
then.
That's all right.
except the memories about my ex that I just recently saw. And
wow.
Yeah. Not
Your
bad
doing
memories.
Okay. You doing okay?
Yeah, they're not bad memories. He's going through a breakup, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think he's handling it pretty well. So, but yeah. So, in getting to know you, I've started to pick up on the things that you care about. But I don't want to tell the audience what things you care about. So. Share with us what issues.
Well, actually, no, I am curious. What do you perceive that I care about? I'm curious. And then I'll answer your question.
I've heard a lot about mental health.
Yeah.
And obviously through your work, I kind of get a sense of the things you care about, you know, main transnet, going to schools. And so, you know, piecing all of those things together, it's created for me a little bit of an understanding of the things that you touch upon. And of course your book, Judas and Suicide, brave choice on the word suicide. Like how many other books have the word suicide on the front cover? I can't remember. There's only that DC Comics series, The Suicide Squad, but that doesn't really.
I'd love to do a Google deep dive because there are a lot of books about suicide.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's either part of the subtitle or it's later in the title or it's addressed in the book description, but not the title.
Yeah. And I find that interesting. So very poetic, the word choice in the title to Thank include you. Suicide in there. And so that's what I have perceived. Now, share with us what issue or issues do you care about the most that you want people to know about, and share with us why you are so passionate about those issues.
Yeah. suicide awareness and suicide prevention intersects with a lot of the work that I do, because grief is so apparent and being alive is so hard. I tend to say that phrase a lot because it's true. And it's far more, and being alive is such a systemic issue that folks aren't much willing to recognize. Like when we talk about mental health, we're like, hey, call this hotline, you know, check on your strong friends and stuff like that. Without being willing to consider that it's not always tied to a diagnosis around wanting to die. And it's like, yeah, warm lines are good, but also, are you gonna help this person pay their rent? Are you gonna help this person feel supported after the call on the warm line is done? Like, what are the external factors that are causing them to not want to live, not just the internal factors?
Yeah, I definitely had some suicidal thoughts in middle school, high school, because of being in the closet. And suicide was very much frowned upon by the Christian church.
Yep.
And
talk about it.
They didn't really understand, well, you're making me feel suicidal because you're making me, repress all of these feelings and emotions and longings for a love that you just won't accept. And then you're going to say, oh, well, you know, quote unquote, don't take the easy way out. It's just such a cop out. It's like, do people know how much effort goes into thinking about suicide? Mm-hmm. Like, people just don't wake up and do it.
Take your own life.
Right? And I never got down to the lengths of sort of like figuring out how I would do it per se, but it was just like little thoughts that would come flit in and out, you know, what if I just wasn't alive? Like, right. What if I didn't have to deal with these feelings? Like, you know, I found myself kind of like putting shades on it to make it less abrupt and be like, what if God just, you know, took me away now in my sleep? And so, it's just like, you know, people don't know what they don't know, right? And I think through your work, through poetry, through your speaking about it, people are starting to understand it more. And especially now in Maine, where we've had the conversations around hospice care, right? Mm-hmm. People are starting to understand it a little bit more. It's not that people just want to end things. Mm-hmm. It's just either they've weighed the options where just the amount of suffering that they would have to continue to experience, but also the suffering that their family would have to continue to experience seeing them like in a certain situation. This is for people in hospice care. For folks, you know, who feel deeply and feel the world in such a different way that sometimes events in life and the world just sort of cascade and just, you know, the tons and tons of the weights of oceans. It feels like, I think one person described it to me, just oceans on top of you all of a sudden, inescapable and suffocating to the point where, like, how do I get out of this situation, or how do I put this to stop? And I think the more that people talk about, the more they understand that not everyone's experience is the same with life, or maybe a lot of people are just going around life living muted.
Yeah. Like, this idea around, like, oh, hey, watch for the warning signs. It's like, but human experience is so vastly different. And, like, and the number one thing people say after someone dies by suicide is, mm-hmm. I didn't know. And it's like, well, it's because you weren't supposed to. So this idea around warning signs, whereas it could be helpful for some people, it's certainly not helpful for everybody. Yeah. So how do you take more preventative matters so that folks don't have to experience those feelings of wanting to disappear in the first place?
Yeah. And I think also understanding the universe and life, whether people believe in reincarnation or not, or what happens after death, also informs a lot of the stigmas around suicidal thoughts ideation. Although I don't really like that word. Do you like that word?
Why?
Ideation.
Why?
Because I don't know. I feel like when someone mentions that a person has been ideating, I don't know if I'm using the word, about suicide, it's like, for me, it gives a sense that they're playing with the idea.
You know, what if they are?
If they are, I wouldn't mind. Like, I wouldn't have anything against it. But I think it's what if people who aren't the ones engaging with it and experiencing those feelings, talking about it.
But the idea is still present. Like, just because someone doesn't want to pursue it doesn't mean the idea just evaporates or anything like that. Some people don't acknowledge, and that's the reason why the term suicidal ideation exists, because there's some folks who are like, I'm not suicidal, I just don't want to wake up the next morning. And it's like, that's actually the definition of suicidal. You just don't want to act on it, which is fine. You're navigating suicidal ideation. And even when, like, some folks use casual statements like, oh goodness, just kill me now, why don't you, it's like huh, of all the phrases you could choose, you chose that one. Mm-hmm. You want to unpack that a little bit? Like,
maybe I just don't understand the word ideation enough.
I'm gonna go to Google. Ideation, noun, the formation of ideas or concepts.
Okay. Oh wait, I have heard it in the consulting speak. Envisioning, ideation. Okay. Definitions. I love definitions. So last question. Not a question, but a request. Would you be willing to read from a poem from your book, Judas and Suicide?
I would love to. Thank you so much for asking. Do you have any requests?
Do you have one that is maybe touches upon our little conversation that we just had about suicide and thoughts and ideation? I think that would be a lovely wrap to the end of this.
Sure. I'll read this one. I also got to perform this one at a TEDx talk last April. And the poem is called Convince Us to Stay. What most people don't understand about suicidal ideation is how hella convinced we have to be to stay on this earth. Some days even want to stay. It's not enough to tell us we'll burden someone if we leave, as often as we think we'll burden someone if we stay. Ideation is the double-edged sword we never asked for. Then again, we never ask to be alive, either. Ideation is the pendulum that swings from one alternate universe of darkness to another. Convince us of an alternate universe of light that exists out there. With less cliches this time. With more cliches we can be proud of. With natural prayers. With no empty prayers at all. Convince us of a better future ahead, without the pressure of having to fucking think of one. Convince us of possibilities, without providing us fucking barriers in the same breath. Hear us. Commend us for our survival without us having to experience the threat of a disappearance in the first place. Need us. No, I mean, really, need us. Not because it'll make you feel better. Because it'll make all of us feel better. No, I mean, really feel better. Like freedom of life, without giving compensation for saving it, after failed attempts. Like summer rains, being the occasional cleanse we desire, with its liveliness within the gray. Like being so fucking present, being a blessed gift in of itself, only no one has to wrap or rewrap it for us. Mental illness unravels like a motherfucker. Convince us of the belief that we can wrap and rewrap it ourselves. Thank you so, so much for this time. It's been so nice to talk to you more.
Yeah, I'm so like, that poem was just wrapped everything together at the end there. Wow, what an interview with my friend Maya Williams, Poet Laureate of the City of Portland, and someday, hopefully soon, the Poet Laureate of the State of Maine. Powers that be, pay attention, I'm putting those vibes out there. So, check out Maya's book, Judas and Suicide, available at your local bookstore, online, bookshop.org, Amazon, whichever you prefer. Some of the links will be in the episode description, so please go and make sure to check that out. As always, thank you for tuning in to Soft Spoken, a podcast. Please go on Apple, go on Spotify, go on your favorite app and online and leave a review and rate it, subscribe, and give me some feedback, folks. Also, in the episode option in Spotify, you can leave some feedback and comments. So if you have a guest that you would like to see on this podcast, please make sure to let me know.